What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Ebony K. Williams sitting in for Jenna Wolf today. That is Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That Mr. Nick Wright. What's up, guys?
Good to see you, Ebony. Thank you for filling in today.
Thank you. Everybody looks fantastic.
Absolutely.
You as well.
Great
Absolutely.
Dress. Great
Thank
dress.
You. Thank you. Thank you.
Let's do it for the people.
Yes. I'm glad you went with commenting on Ebony's clothes opposed to mine.
Yeah, yeah. You told me not to tell the people. You rented a suit from a guy. See, does it look good? You don't know if you're going to buy it.
Chris Carter loves doing this. I call it a compliment sandwich. It starts with, Nick, I love that suit. That must be new. Who's the dead guy you stole it off of?
That's like a compliment, though. Chris Carter. Just saying your casket sharp, which some folks would say that's a compliment.
That's a nice spin to put on it, Ebony. I appreciate that.
I try to do what I can. We're going to start this morning with Odell Beckham Jr. and his impending contract extension. Now, according to new report, the New York Giants and Odell are engaged in contract talks that could make him the highest paid wide receiver in the entire NFL. Now, Beckham is currently playing under the fifth-year option of his rookie deal. So, Chris Carter, how would expectations change for Odell if he indeed becomes the highest paid receiver in the league?
Well, fans do this all the time. Based on how much you make, they typically change what their expectations are. Now, people think that the fans are always wrong. And in doing that, fans aren't always wrong because organizations, they do the same thing. Based on who the player is, what position he's playing. So, let's say, for instance, Zach Martin. He's a good player, right? One of the best that we have, maybe the best at his position. Dallas gave him a new contract. They didn't expect different things in the second contract than what they expected in the first contract.
Well, there's certain guys who get paid according to what you think they will be, and guys who get paid based on just continue being that guy. Zach Martin, when he got his new contract, was already considered one of maybe the best guard in football. So they paid him and said, just keep being the best guard in football. As opposed to guys we've seen get paid almost on a like with the Chiefs with Sammy Watkins.
Yes.
The Chiefs with Sammy Watkins, they didn't pay him to continue to be the guy he's been. They paid him to be the guy they think he can be.
Right. And then there's some other things around the organization that they might expect that fans might not see. Now, Zach Martin, inside that locker room, they're expecting him to be more of a leader, to have more of a voice after they lost people like Witten. So Zach Martin, Ezekiel Elliott, people expect him to do that. The Giants should have the same type of expectations on OBJ because it's just not about him being the highest paid. It's where he is in that organization with Eli maybe having a year or two left. Who's going to be the leader, the voice of that organization? And also, he's got young talent that they have spent major assets on in Sterling Sharp, the tight end Ingram, and Barkley, the running back. So also, you got to be a good example and a good leader to those young guys who ultimately you want to see them sign. So I know the Giants and the way they've done things that, yes, they're going to pay him. Yes, he should be the highest because if you look at all the guys that have come up in the last 6 months, he's the only guy that's a top five receiver. So it's his turn to catapult to the front of the line. But, yes, the Giants, they should have increased their expectations of him off the field.
Right.
Because that's just a part of being a good leader.
That is spot on. What are their expectations for Odell Beckham Jr. with a new contract on the field? To maintain the level of play he has exhibited since essentially the first NFL game he's ever played. On the field, you can't get much better than a guy who averages nearly a touchdown a game, nearly 100 yards per game, and has had arguably the most productive opening 47 games of a career of any receiver ever. Just maintain that. But off the field, it is, and you said this to him specifically, I remember a summer and a half ago or a year and a half ago. Okay, if and when you get your new contract, those voluntary workouts are no longer voluntary. You are there. You are leading the workouts. If and when you get that new contract, a lot of this other noise that surrounds you has to be set aside because you are, as Coach Mangini talks about all the time, Who the team chooses to pay shows the team's priorities not only on the field, but off the field. What do we endorse? What do we not endorse? And when they just spent the number two pick on of the draft on Saquon Barkley, a guy who has the potential to be potentially the type of celebrity Odell is, okay, what type of leader are you going to be? What type of example are you going to set? That's where the expectations change, because you're no longer this fantastic young player that's better than we expected. Now you are exactly what we thought you were because we paid you accordingly. So it's the total package, not just the on-the-field stuff.
That makes complete sense to me. What we do know is the organizations don't pay guys for what they have done, certainly.
Typically.
Typically, would you say that's that's correct, Chris Carter, from your experience? So if you're Odell, you're coming back from an injury, do you guys expect him to be in top form, or is that what it's looking like?
Yeah, he looks very, very good. He's happy with where he is, and it's the first time he's had a significant injury. So anytime you journey down that road that you've never been down, it's always, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to respond. And also the looming contract issues. The one thing that I will not debate you on, but check as far as what you said about Odell, him maintaining. Odell thinks that he can be a lot better than he has been.
Okay.
And the reason why is because he's really got a sharp, sharp mind, and he's really critiqued everything he's done. So he knows that some of those easy catches, he should have those. He knows that sometimes he tries to do too much. Sometimes he doesn't get his proper depth. So he believes, and I believe, that he can be substantially better than any Odell that we've seen in the first 4 years.
And I'm not putting a ceiling on it. I'm not saying he can't.
You're just talking about the numbers.
What I'm saying is, if he never gets better, maybe he'll be disappointed, but he could just maintain this level of production and be worthy of $17 million a year under the new NFL salary cap, under the new salary structure. But as far as what he needs to improve on, the very basic and obvious one is drops. Dropping the easy passes like you were talking about. The question I have for you is, what type of coverage or what type of corner, in your eyes, gives Odell the most trouble, and how can he improve on something like that?
Well, he has to realize, too, that they don't have a proven threat opposite him at the other receiver spot, so he's probably, conventional wisdom say he's going to get a lot of cover, too, where they're going to have a cornerback within 3 to 5 yards to try to jam off the line of scrimmage and a safety helping on that side of the field. But you can see teams are going to try to get physical with him at the line of scrimmage, all right, because ultimately he's had problems with confrontations, guys getting into his head, getting him off the game. So it's not only the coverage that you expect to see, but it's also the style and mentality. What does the NFL say about Odell? That you can get in his head, you can talk trash to him to get him off of his game.
To that point, to the fact that he might be a little physically risky, right? A little bit. Not physically, mentally, rather. Yep. He is coming back from an injury. I want to ask you both, is there any risk at all with New York making him the highest paid wide receiver in the league?
I think there's risk anytime you give a person in their 20s or their 30s or their 40s, but certainly in their 20s, this type of generational wealth. There's always the risk that they will go the wrong way with it. I think there are some safeguards in place with Odell in that, because he's one of the few, if not the only non-quarterback in the league that has that enormous Nike money, I don't think you have to worry about that, okay, he's been one guy before he got paid, now he's going to be a different guy. But that cuts in the other direction as well, which is are the things you don't like, the generic you don't like about Odell, is that behavior going to get better? That's going to be a decision only he can make. I don't think the money is going to change him in a positive or negative way. But I don't worry, because he broke his leg last year, he's going to be a different player on the field. And I don't worry that because he gets paid, he's going to get complacent. He's going to stop working hard, because I don't think that's what it's about for him.
There is no player you can sign to a deal in the league and not be worried. When Green Bay signs Aaron Rodgers, they're going to sign him and they're going to pray. There is no guarantee that any player that is... You're in a collision sport, and it only takes one play. The thing about it is, Odell has shown us inconsistencies that would not only bring the danger of football into play, but how much is him being on the field, is his image important to him? So there's other things, too, that you bring in. But if I can give Kirk Cousins $84 million, and not be worried about it, I can give Odell and other players that money that they deserve.
All right, fair enough, guys. Coming up, can Dak Prescott lead the Cowboys back to the playoffs in year three? That's next here on First Things First.
This is the First Things First podcast, the episode brought to you by 4hims.com. It's time to discuss an issue that you may not want to hear. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. But good news, it's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace what you lost. How will you feel a year from now if there are bald spots creeping up? Well, here are your options. Do you want a bald spot to pop up or your hairline to recede? Or do you want to do something about it first? This is where 4hims.com comes in. It is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and an overall helpful product for men. That's right. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. There are no waiting rooms or weird doctor visits down a back alley. Just go to 4hims.com and take action today. It is so easy. Products will be brought right to your door. Here's how to do it. Order now. Listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/first. That's 4hims, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com/first. 4hims.com/first.
Packers preseason practice. Aaron Rodgers and Tim Boyle dazzled the crowd with these long tosses in the basket. Just look at that beautiful there from Aaron Rodgers.
Now, I know C's going to say, we've been doing this for 40 years. Everyone in the NFL can do this. This isn't that impressive, but I'm impressed.
Yeah, of course, you should be, Nick, but they've probably been doing this for 50 years. What they do typically is they put a trash can back there. Now they have a no, look, we got advances, we got a net, all right? But we typically put a trash can back there, or you put a guy back there, Chris Carter, he grabbed that thing with one hand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been doing that for a long time.
Classing it up a little bit, Chris. We're going to move on now to the Cowboys, specifically QB Dak Prescott. Now, after missing the playoffs in his second season, Prescott admitted that he's got to be more consistent in year three. Dak told Sports Illustrated, I have bigger and higher expectations for myself than anyone else does or ever will. So for me, it's not trying to live up to expectations, but you want to win and you want to make that play to win. It's that, trying to win on every throw. I got to get myself out of position. Sometimes you want it too much. You look at some of my interceptions, it's simple as that. All right, some reflection there by Dak Prescott. Chris Carter, what does he have to do this season to be successful?
He's got to be a guy that when they decide to drop back, because defenses at certain portions of the game will take them out of their running game because they don't have a variance of things they can do offensively besides Ezekiel Elliott up the middle, Ezekiel Elliott off tackle, Ezekiel Elliott around the outside. Once teams start to get a book on that, and there will be games, there will be quarters where they will not be able to run the football as good as they are up front and as good as Zeke is. Yep. And in those situations, they're going to force Dallas to be able to throw the football, which they did last year, and they were not consistent enough. Dak wasn't great as far as reading coverages. He wasn't great as far as coming off the number one receiver going to number two. And as far as once the play broke down, when the play was off schedule, he was not as good as he was in year number one or the Dak that we saw at Mississippi State. So in those areas, right, when the defense is dictating that Dallas must throw the ball, he has to be more consistent with how he's going to deliver the football.
In this article where he gave this quote to Albert Breer, Monday Morning Quarterback, he also broke down for Albert two specific interceptions from last season that he said basically these are the types of plays I can't make. One was a misread with Dez Bryant where Dez broke deep and he said, man, the pass could have been fair caught. Two guys could have picked it off because basically we were on different pages. Now, he seemed to be taking accountability for that, but obviously things like that are one of the reasons Dez Bryant's no longer with Dallas. The other play, though, was a little more troubling in that they were down 22-6. It was the fourth quarter. He was trying to make a play, and he throws across his body, doesn't get enough on it. It's returned 90 yards for a touchdown. So they're in a scoring zone to try to cut it to a one-score game. Ends up being a three-score game. The game's over. And so those are obviously mistakes he didn't make in year one. But in large part, those were mistakes he didn't make in year one because weren't a lot of times they're down 22-6. Mm-hmm. Weren't a lot of times that in the fourth quarter he had to go out there and make plays. So for him to be successful, all those things you talk about he has to do. Mm-hmm. But for him to be considered a success this year, it's, to me, very simple. The Cowboys have to be a playoff team. Because if I tell you, they got the best running game in football. They have a defense that at this point has become slightly underrated. They've been a top half of the league defense each of the last 2 years, and 2 years ago it was a top 10 defense. So if your defense is average, let's call it average at worst, you have the best running game in football, the best pass protection, or one of the best pass protection units in football, then if you are not a playoff team, what's it about? It's about your passing game. And I know the passing game has guys that did your job, but it's primarily about the guy that does that job. So for him to be viewed as a success, it's going to be about winning, as he mentioned. It's going to be about, are the Cowboys back in the playoffs?
Let me follow up on that, though, Nick. You say it's going to be about this guy, but it's no secret that the Cowboys have the 29th ranked receiving core. And that's got to be an issue, right, Chris Carter?
Well, this game can be played without wide receivers, but it makes it more difficult. And when you don't have the guy pulling the trigger, who Coach Mangini, when he sits here, calls a force multiplier, then it becomes almost impossible. Like, you move the ball through the running game,
right?
But you score points in the passing game because offense is hard to methodically move down the field 8 to 12 plays. So if you don't have those big chunks, 12, 20, 30-yard chunks, that's what the offense needs. In Dallas, when Dallas has been successful, when they had the triplets, Michael and Troy and Emmett, what they did, they ran the ball on people and scored in the passing game. But they could do either one when they wanted to. This Dallas team, with their lack of weapons, it's hard. It's hard on Zeke. It's harder on the quarterback. But Dak has to be able to. He said he's harder on himself. Okay, we're going to see because I'm going to be pretty hard on him.
Okay.
All right? And the wide receivers, they have to be able to get in chemistry with Dak and be able to make big plays on the. They have no identity right now. They have one receiver that had a 1,000-yard season, and that was several seasons ago. Right. So who is going to be their guy, how they're going to do it? And to me, people like Cole Beasley, they're going to have an outstanding year.
Tavon Austin, maybe.
However they're going to use him.
Correct. And so, but here's the reason that I think it's going to be totally fair for you to be hard on him, for Dak to be under a microscope this year. I understand he has, and you mentioned 29th ranked, that's according to Pro Football Focus. You can make a case that's a little too complimentary for, given what those guys have accomplished in the NFL. I understand he is. The team's done him no favors by the wide receiver talent they put around him. But if I'm talking about what's important to a quarterback's success, the number one thing I would rank is how good your offensive line. Because if you have a terrible offensive line, you got no shot. If you know you're going to be clean, if you know you're not going to be pressured in the first 2 seconds, that's the biggest advantage any quarterback can have, at least in my eyes. A bigger advantage than an all-pro wide receiver. Because you got to have time to get the ball to an all-pro wide receiver. Now, you can make an argument, would a quarterback rather have a bunch of stud wide receivers or an amazing running back to take pressure off him? That's debatable. But of the three things that a quarterback needs, he's got A pluses in two of them. So he's in a beneficial situation overall, at least the way I view it. You seem skeptical.
And I know that you don't think wide receivers are important.
No, that's Colin Cowherd.
But let me tell you
that's
something.
That's not me.
Okay, now, unless you are a transcendent quarterback, you tell me someone in the NFL that's winning with average wide receivers. Okay? It's hard to impossible to do. So, yeah, we can sit on the show and be like, yeah, I'd love to have an offensive line. But how many of those dominant offensive lines are going to the Super Bowl? All right? We don't see that. So the modern game has changed. People are advancing the ball, and they are doing it through the air. And Dallas has one of the worst receiving cores. If you look at them, the Jaguars, the Cardinals, the Bills, between the three or four of them, like, those are the worst groups in the league. And I don't see championship aspirations out of that group except the Jaguars. And the reason why? Because they're going to have a top five defense. So saying that having one good wide receiver compared to the collection of offensive linemen, you have to have three good offensive linemen to have a good offensive line. You just need one wide receiver to make sure that you got a competent wide receiver group.
But the Cowboys do have those three offensive linemen. I wouldn't rather have one stud left tackle versus a stud receiver. I wouldn't rather have picked Joe Staley or Tyron Smith over Antonio Brown. But the collection of offensive linemen he has is as good as any or better than anybody in the league. And so I think the security of that is incredibly valuable to
no
to the
problem. That's it. Yep. His mentor, Colin Cowherd, had a negative influence on that. I understand. No problem.
Call you guys icing on the cake the way Cowherd did.
Listen, even though Nick might not appreciate me, his wife, Danielle's like, man, you need a wide receiver, Nick. You need a little fancy in your life. You need a little step. You need a little pop.
Skill players for a reason, for sure. Dak's work is cut out for him. Coming up, how poised are the reigning Super Bowl champs, the Eagles, for future success?
I'm going to take a break.
Time now for some stories to start your morning. The Patriots released Malcolm Mitchell yesterday. Now, this is yet another receiver that Tom Brady will not have at the start of the season. All right, we just talked about your value of wide receivers, Nick, but are you at all worried about Brady's lack of weapons?
No, listen, Malcolm Mitchell made some big plays for them in the Super Bowl comeback against Atlanta. Some big first down catches, but injuries have really derailed the last year for him. I know that he was waived with a past physical, but injuries once again. They brought in Eric Decker, and Tom Brady will make do. Like, Malcolm Mitchell, to me, wasn't going to be a game changer for them, so releasing him is not a big deal.
Gronk is the only wide receiver they have is not replaceable, not only because of his receiving ability, he's elite because of his ability to block. Edelman will be missed in the first four games, but we've seen their system has proved tried and true, and number 12, a difference maker, a force multiplier, not like the guy in Dallas. Number 12, he can have no-name guys and be able to get it done with them.
A little bit different situation. All right. Now to the Rams. According to reports, Aaron Donald not expected to report to camp anytime soon. He'll miss today's deadline. That'll give him a year of free agency. So that makes him a restricted free agent next year. Chris Carter, it's complicated. How do you expect this to play out?
They got to pay him. He's the best defensive player in the NFL right now, and they have shown through other contracts that they planned on signing him because you do not give Todd Gurley that type of guarantees without
2 years early.
Without addressing the Aaron Donald. You do not give Brandon Cooks a long-term security that because – he's no difference maker as a wide receiver. He's just a good wide receiver. Yeah. So Aaron Donald, when you sign those contracts, you, in the back of your mind, you got plans to be able to get his contract done.
The restricted, unrestricted part of this doesn't matter a ton to me because if they don't get it done with him, they'll still put a franchise tag on him, whether he'd be restricted or unrestricted.
Right.
The reason this could get ugly is a bizarre provision in the new CBA. This is, I feel like the owners just slipped this one by the players. For players in their fifth-year option, if you skip a preseason game, you're fined a regular season game check. It's the only players that that's true for. So Aaron Donald, obviously, he skipped all the preseason last year, but that didn't cost him that much money. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about $400,000 a preseason game. So this is something that for both parties, they are best served to get it taken care of sooner than later.
Yeah, you can sign the franchise tag and not play in the preseason game.
That's expensive holdout.
Which is different than this.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
All right, guys. Now, to the Buffalo Bills. Head coach Sean McDermott had high praise for his rookie QB. McDermott said this about Josh Allen, quote, "The game doesn't seem too big for Josh." All right, Chris Carter, do you think Josh Allen will be a successful professional quarterback?
I talked to Sean McDermott on Saturday at the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the quarterback coach, and they have a lot of confidence in him, have a lot of confidence in his throwing ability, and also they've challenged him with some things intellectually. They challenged him with some different looks that they thought he might not be prepared for, and they've loved the way that he's been able to adjust. They do understand there will be bad days, and they're willing to stick with him through those bad days. days because they believe that he's going to be a superstar for the Buffalo Bills.
What he has going for him is he doesn't have an established guy breathing down his neck. Like, it's not like I don't feel he has to play great in the preseason to unseat either of the other two quarterbacks on the depth chart. A.J. McCarron has never been an NFL starter, and Nate Peterman has never been an NFL starter. He is not only the heir apparent, he might be the right now, even though he's far and away of all the quarterbacks drafted at the top half of the first round, the rawest and the one who accomplished the least in college, but he might have the most physical tools, which is what I know Coach McDermott was talking to you about.
All right, fast. Now, a year after winning the Super Bowl title, the Eagles have locked in their brain trust for the next couple of years. Both head coach Doug Peterson and general manager Howie Roseman were given contract extensions through the year 2022. Now, with these two locked up, you got a franchise QB returning from injury, not to mention that other QB that won the title for him, and a loaded roster looking to repeat as Super Bowl champions. The future looks awful bright in Philly. Nick, how well are the Eagles set up for sustained long-term success?
So I'd be careful here because I thought the Seattle Seahawks, which had a great head coach in Pete Carroll, I think an excellent general manager in John Schneider, a great young quarterback in Russell Wilson, who won the Super Bowl in year two, were set up to be a dynasty. And they went and made the Super Bowl the next year, and that was as good as it ever got. And so Philly is as set up as well as you can be for long-term success in the NFL. But what that evidently means is, in this era, unless you're the Patriots, it's still a year-to-year proposition. Like, there are no dynastic runs in the NFL until it's already happened. Like, there's no way to say, and so they are set up, I'd rather be the Eagles right now than probably any other team in the NFC, and maybe any other team in football other than the Patriots. But that doesn't mean anything. Like, that's how I felt about Seattle 5 years ago, and they got one ring out of it.
Well, Seattle, because their own doing, they could have had two. And if you get two, that is a dynasty in the NFL. The reason why the NFL is so popular is not just the betting and not some of the other things. It is that we have the parity. And every year you have 5 to 8 teams that potentially could represent your conference in the Super Bowl. So that leads to the NFL being more popular. If I had a fantasy draft and you tell me I can take one owner right now with their current situation for the next 5 years, I'm taking Philadelphia because they have ownership. They have a strong cash organization where they make a lot of money. They have a very good fan base, and they have one of the best young quarterbacks in the NFL. They have a head coach that's proven. So they have a lot of things moving forward that, yes, they're doing the right things. There's no salary cap for coaching staffs. There's no salary cap for front office. So give them the type of security that they need to be able to build this roster, because this roster is partially done through the draft, partially done through free agent, and guys that they've picked up off the street. So collectively, Peterson has done a great job working with Howie to be able to get this roster to where it is. This is not a roster they inherited. No, they made this roster into what we see to be the Super Bowl champ. So, yeah, fantasy, if I get to pick one roster and you got to have a 5-year window, Philadelphia is the roster that I take.
And the one thing that they also have that you didn't mention, but we experienced it firsthand at the NFC Championship game, is an unbelievable home field advantage that not every team in the NFL has. Like, that is one of the loudest outdoor stadiums in the league. And if you are a team that can run the ball and does have the defensive front that they have, if you're going to be hosting playoff games, the fact that they're in a bad weather city actually, I think, can work to their advantage. And as far as Howie Roseman goes, and I think more teams will start to mimic this approach, if you will, because of their success, he was more aggressive in the trade market than we see NFL teams typically be, not only preseason, but during the season, trying to go out and acquire guys. And I don't think he'll change that approach either. So I agree with you that they are as set up as any team can be. Mm-hmm. But in other sports, we can look at it and say, okay, like, the Warriors are set up to win multiple rings. We'd be shocked if they didn't.
And the reason why I didn't think Seattle would be able to sustain it for a long time was because of the type of personalities they had. Marshawn Lynch is not something you can sustain. You can't sustain the bickering going forth, back and forth with Richard Sherman, and with players feel like they're more important than the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. So that's not something I knew that can be maintained. And we knew they had to get their money. So if they got their money, what was going to happen then? So Seattle, in this new modern NFL, what they did was pretty special. And besides New England, the only team to be able to do it.
Yeah, built different. Just a quick question, because it's looking very rosy for Philly to me. And I'm just curious, any potential problems with the Wentz-Nick Foles situation? Any conflict you see arising from that?
Maybe in a normal situation. We had Nick Foles. He's set right here. He's very, very comfortable being the backup. Now, as long as he don't listen to people like Nick Wright and yourself, all right? And as long as he understands that he's a backup and there's a stud in Carson Wentz ahead of me, and right now this is the best thing for me mentally, physically, and the best thing for his family. Yeah, don't listen to the people.
Don't look at that Super Bowl ring on your finger. Don't look at that.
No.
Well, he can look at it.
Don't look at that.
But look at that clipboard, because that's what's important. Hey, Carson, let's run play number three.
All right.
That's what's important right now.
I feel you. Okay, we're going to move on to the Houston Texans. Now, it's been a tough few years for the former Defensive Player of the Year, J.J. Watt. He missed most of the last 2 years with injury. Now, he knows he's got a lot of doubters, but he can get back to form. But he told Peter King this: I don't expect anybody else to be convinced. I don't expect anybody outside to have any reason to believe that I'm not going to make any proclamations about comparing things to the past or what I'm going to do in the future. But I will say I feel very good. Chris Carter, how critical is a healthy J.J. Watt to the Texans being a playoff team?
Man, he's critical. I mean, he's critical to the storylines that we have in football. The last couple of years, we've seen J.J. Watt and other marquee players hurt early in the season, and it's kind of taken some of the excitement out of the football season because so many marquee guys got hurt. But right now, J.J. Watt is at that crossroad.
Yeah.
You know, he will always go down as one of the greatest players that we've seen in this era, but will he be able to take his individual success and be able to make it into team success? Because he hadn't been on a successful team yet. You know, even though they've gotten to the playoffs without him, he hasn't been able to utilize his talent in the big games. Because that's one thing you want to see: the greatest players playing on the biggest stages, playing at their absolute best. And we haven't been able to see that with J.J. Watt. We know what they have on the offensive side of the book. Can him, Jadeveon Clowney, and the Whitney Merciless, can all these guys stay on the field? Because if they do, they should have a great defense. And if they can be a top eight, top 10 defense, I believe the Houston Texans will be in the playoffs.
So you mentioned the playoff success. It's odd that J.J.'s one iconic, if you will, playoff moment came before he was J.J. Watt. It was his rookie year, the tipped pass interception touchdown against Cincinnati in that playoff win for the Houston Texans. And then the next year he wins Defensive Player of the Year, is the 20.5 sacks. Then he wins two of the next three Defensive Players of the Year. But there was no correlation. Like, he was healthy in 2013. They went 2-14. He was then healthy in 2015. They went 9-7. He missed almost all of 2016. They went 9-7. There hasn't been a ton of correlation between his production and the team's overall success. But what's been true all those years, essentially, is they've never had a quarterback. Now, I believe they have a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I know that you might be more skeptical about Deshaun Watson, what he will do instantly this year than I am, but he's going to be better than Tom Savage. He's going to be better than Ryan Mallett. He's going to be better than T.J. Yates, the guys they've had there. Mm-hmm. So it is about how good is J.J. Watt still? No one questions how good he was at his peak. He won 3 out of 4 Defensive Player of the Years. He's, I think, the only player in league history to have multiple 20-sack seasons, and he's a great run defender. But in his last 8 starts, he has 1.5 sacks. In his last 2 seasons, he's only played 8 games. So is he going to be better than he was previous to the most recent injury? Because previous to the most recent injury, that's when he had 8 games played over 1.5 years with just a sack and a half. Like, are we, forget getting back to 20 sacks, are we going to get J.J. Watt back to 15 sacks? If they do, then I fully agree about how good this defense can be. They added Tyrann Mathieu. They've spent a ton of money on the secondary. They have Merciless, Watt, and Clowney. Those are 3 premier pass rushing options for him.
The things I worry about is J.J. Watt he's a very explosive athlete. But the number of injuries that he's had, even when he was younger and in his prime, as you get older, now, I don't think he can sustain another major injury. Now, Houston, they have a lot of faith in J.J. Watt. It's really important that guys on the team, because they got a lot of young players ready to make that next step, but they haven't played a lot of football with J.J. Watt. And J.J. Watt, as a leader, I believe, is critical to Houston. And I believe that defense needs to be better because I believe the offense in Deshaun Watson this year will face some struggles. I don't believe he's going to just build on the games that he played last year. I believe he will face what the NFL typically does. That second year, you come back to the field a little bit, and there's a little correction in his
game. And the injury that worries you, listen, it was a brutal leg break he suffered last year. But that doesn't concern you as much as the back surgeries, as the disc hernia, and he came back too soon, which is what then put him on the shelf for the 2016 season. For a guy, listen, back surgeries are tough for anybody, but a guy who plays that position where power is such an important part of his game, he's such, in a sport of total freak athletes, he's one of the freakiest athletes. You wonder, is he going to be able to get the power the way he had it in the past? Because it wasn't just his speed. He was typically stronger than your strongest offensive lineman, which was an enormous part of his success.
Yeah, one thing that I worry about, too, is the amount of weight that J.J. Watt has put on his body in the last 6 or 8 years. Uh-huh. Like, I don't know if his body is made to contain how big he is now. I guarantee when J.J. Watt gets out of football, he immediately going to lose 30 or 40 pounds. So now you got a bad back, that compression as a defensive lineman, the constant headbutting, which goes down your spine. Those are the things. Great players with a bad back, they typally don't last long.
Oh, man. Brutal.
Man, all right, I hate we'll to disappoint you.
I know. It's just rooting for the guy. Seems like a nice kid. All right, coming up, Rich Wicke quarterback is ready to go in week one. That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Super Bowl champ Chris Canty's joined the show.
Hey now.
Good to
What's
see
happening?
You.
Good
How
to see you?
You,
Chris.
Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Looking good. Nice
Appreciate
blue
that.
Suit. I like
Appreciate
the
that.
Monitor.
He always looks good.
Try to
man.
Clean up.
It's very, very clean.
Suit. Exactly.
And what do we call this nice accessory right here?
Just a little lapel pin.
Beautiful.
Just a little something, a little sauce.
A little razzle
Sometimes
dazzle.
Sometimes a pocket square just won't get it done. So you got
to
throw
I very much appreciate it. Stunning. All right, guys, we're going to move on to the New York Jets. Sam Darnold has high expectations as the third overall draft pick, and you might even see some action very, very early. According to Adam Schefter, Sam Darnold has a very fair shot to win the starting QB job, beating out Josh McCown and Teddy Bridgewater. Chris, should Sam Darnold start week one?
I don't think he should start week one because when you look at the Jets' schedule, they have 3 games in 10 days to open the season. Monday night at Detroit, then they're home against Miami, then they're on the road in Cleveland in Thursday night football. So it's hard for me to believe a quarterback that's only had 2 years of collegiate experience and 3 years at the position in his entire life is going to be ready to process information real time in the NFL game. It's always a little bit faster when you transition to the different levels of sport, high school to college, college to pro. And so with Sam Darnold having to make that adjustment, I just have a hard time believing that he's going to be up to snuff in terms of being able to understand the information in those respective game plans and then being able to evaluate his performance and quickly move on to the next game, especially in the first month of the season.
So here's the only reason I wouldn't start my top 5 draft pick early. Do I think I have an offensive line that could get him killed? And with the Jets, I think I might have an offensive line that could get him killed. Like, we've been talking about these PFF rankings all week on the show, and we'll continue to. The Jets, I think, have the 31st ranked offensive line. Now, they don't have a high ranking in almost any category. It's one of the reasons they were drafting so high. It's one of the reasons they're the Jets. But when I feel like I have a couple competent starting options, when they have the schedule that you're talking about where you have early in the season that extended week, because you're talking about 3 games in 10 days, but that also means going into week 4, you have a week and a half to prepare for that team. For all those reasons, Darnold would have to be tremendous in training camp and in preseason games for me to say when I know McCown can be serviceable, and I think Teddy Bridgewater has the potential to be better than serviceable, and I'm worried about Sam Darnold in his first NFL action just getting eviscerated behind that offensive line. For all those reasons, he would have to be over the top great in training camp for me to make him the week one starter. I know he's eventually going to be the starter, but week one starter.
I can't answer this question without seeing the preseason game. I mean, we had a handful of practices. A guy was a holdout because his contract didn't get resolved. We got Josh McCown. We also have Teddy Bridgewater sitting there, guys who understand NFL and the complexity of you make the best point as far as those first three games in that short period of time. That is not the type of schedule you'd want to start a young guy. But you can't answer this until you see the preseason. We need to see him against some live bullets because right now, man, we don't know. Adam Schefter, oh, he's going to have a fair shot. Well, I got a fair shot of getting up tomorrow morning, but I might not. But it might not happen. We need to see him against some live bullets. There's nothing that Adam Schefter has seen in training camp that would be able to validate this. He's just talked to the coaching staff, and because he did well in the mini camps, he did well in the OTAs, he understands the offense and has looked good in certain periods there with the Jets. Man, the preseason games are very, very important, not only for Sam Darnold, but for all these young quarterbacks. And also, on the Jets roster, Teddy Bridgewater. Yeah. He hadn't played a whole bunch of football. So the preseason is very important for all of them. In 4 weeks, we might be like, you know something? Teddy Bridgewater looks like the Teddy Bridgewater we saw 3 years ago in Minnesota. He should be starting.
I think it'll become clear as training camp goes on and as you see these guys in actual preseason games. And Todd Bowles has made a point to let everybody know that Teddy Bridgewater and Sam Darnold, those two will get the lion's share of the preseason reps.
Yes.
Because realistically, what more do we need to see from Josh McCown?
We know what he is
and we know what he isn't. That being said, Josh McCown is the incumbent. Those guys got to go take the job from him. And, Nick, you talked about the offensive line being a trouble spot for that Jets unit. When you look at Kelvin Beachum being week to week with a foot injury, that could maybe exacerbate that issue. So, I mean, when you start looking at the requisite talent on that offensive unit, it's not necessarily the kind of unit that you would expect to be able to carry a young quarterback. So that's why I worry about playing Sam Darnold sooner rather than later. But all of that being said, when you look at the practices and those guys that are competing out there every day on that team, they know the quarterback that gives them the best chance to win. And so Todd Bowles has got to make sure that he's making sure he's accountable to those other guys in the locker room and puts the quarterback under center that gives that team the best chance to win week one.
Especially because Todd Bowles isn't going into the season as with exactly the highest level of job security. He's not the, you know what I mean? He's not, I think a lot of people were surprised that the Jets won as many games as they did last year, particularly early, which is one of the reasons Todd Bowles got another year. But so this is a guy that if he thinks, man, Bridgewater gives me a better chance first couple games of the year, one or two more wins at the end of the season could be the difference between him getting another year as head coach or them moving on. But the other, I mean, we mentioned the offensive line not being good. We were talking about trouble spot wide receiving cores. The Jets are, to me, you can make an argument, they have the highest level of concern as far as pass catchers as any team in the league. They also, as an added bonus, don't have an established excellent or even, I think, an established well above average running back. Like, the offense as a whole is going to struggle no matter who the quarterback is. But with respect to Adam Schefter, I think it's the best, as good as anybody in the business at breaking NFL news and reporting on things. What would have been news to me would have been if 4 days into training camp, Sam Darnold doesn't have a very fair shot to be the starting quarterback. Like, this was par for the course, right? When you take him third overall, of course he has a very fair shot to be the starter. Something would have to go terribly wrong for him not to have a very fair shot to be the starter.
Yeah, this wasn't something that came across the ticker and said, breaking news. Oh. He's got a fair shot. Okay, Adam. All right.
The one thing I'll say about it, though, once you put him in, you can't go to one of those other quarterbacks. He's got to be your guy.
That's
because you drafted
point.
Him third overall.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's definitely the future. All right, Chris Kane is going to stick around with us. Next up, are the Giants finally going to give OBJ his money? That's next on First Things First. All right, back here on First Things First, and Chris Canty is still with us. We're talking Odell Beckham Jr. and his impending contract extension. Now, according to reports, the Giants and Odell are engaged in contract talks that could make him the highest-paid wide receiver in the NFL. Beckham's currently playing under the fifth-year option of his rookie deal. So, Chris Canty, how would you expect expectations to change for Odell if he indeed becomes the highest paid receiver in the league?
Well, Ebony, I don't know that it's about the expectations on the field. I think we have to focus on the expectations off the field. And it has to be more like what we've seen this offseason for the most part. Save the video of him in Paris in that hotel room. Odell is done. and said the right things. He showed up at OTAs. He showed up day one of the off-season strength and conditioning program. He was at minicamp, even though he was a limited participant. And he's at training camp now, and he's taking part in 11-on-11 drills. I think that's what the Giants want to see from Odell Beckham Jr. When you start talking about paying a player that kind of money, $16, $17, $18 million a year on average annual value contract extension, it has to be about more than production. It has to be about exhibiting those leadership qualities and reflecting the highest ideals of the organization. And I think Odell is starting to get in line with what John Mara and Steve Tisch want in their star player.
I mean, I think this is the – we're all, I think, going to say something similar, which is the expectations for him on the field are to continue being Odell Beckham Jr. Now, his expectations for himself might be higher, might be I'm going to exceed even what I've already done. But he has produced the value of a guy at that position worth $16, $17, $18 million a year already. If he just continues on the track that he was on through his first 3 years prior to the injury, it is all about the things that don't have to do with catching the football. Now, can he get better? Everyone can get better on the field. He can be better on his precision. He's better on dropping easy passes. But with those weaknesses, he's still produced as well as any player in the league. We're talking about, is he going to be a guy you have to answer questions about that don't have to do with football? Is he going to be a guy that shows Saquon Barkley how you are supposed to conduct yourself as a superstar talent in New York City, and a guy that can be, once you get paid, you are de facto one of the guys in the locker room the young players look to? That is how I need to act in addition to how I need to play to get paid. Those are the questions. And I think you bring up a great point, which is over the course of the last year, he has said all the right things, I feel. Now, the video was there. The touchdown celebration are the two big yeah buts. And the video is, for a lot of people, an enormous yeah but. But as far as things he's actually said and where he has shown up, where he said he would, where he has made it very clear, listen, I'm going to let my agent handle the contract extension stuff. I'm here to play football. That's all the things the Giants and Pat Shurmur and the new GM would want him and have asked him to do. And he's been doing all of those things. So in that regard, he's trending in the correct direction already.
My expectations might be a little bit different than the Giants. I know the Giants, they want more leadership, which they should. Typically, players going to that second year and being the face of a franchise like the New York Football Giants, those are normal expectations. But for me, a few things that I want to look at. I want to look at the negative plays on the field. That means plays that he affects the offense in a negative way, that being either getting a personal foul during the game, either getting a celebration penalty after the play is dead, or stuff that has occurred even on the sideline. So there's a number of things that I want to see. From the emotional standpoint, is his emotion driving the team to wins, or is the emotion a divisive thing that he's only doing just so eyeballs are on him? The last thing that I want to see is, I want to see his overall energy when other people score. I watch wide receivers, not when they score. I watch them when their team scores. Now, do they have the same type of energy? Now, Odell Beckham, he has not displayed on a regular basis the same type of energy that he has to do Michael Jackson dances when his teammates make big plays. So these are the types of things advanced. They're not what normal people look at, but I look at this because teams look at this. Other wide receivers look at this. When you're watching the film as a team, defensive players, as they're watching the field, Snatch Harrison, he'll be watching for them. How much can you encourage your teammates? So these are other things that are outside the money that I expect Odell Beckham to do a better job at than he's done his first 4 years playing.
Let me ask you a quick follow-up question. When you talked about the emotions on the first side, on the one of your first points, do you feel Odell's like emotions are more about wanting people to look at him, or just naturally who he is almost a exuberant personality? Or do you think it's just a combination of the two?
No, Odell is attracted to the optics of looking at him. And the reason why I know this is because he didn't play football like this at LSU. He didn't play football like this his rookie year. But now he loves the attention. That's why he goes to the red carpet. You don't see Antonio at the red carpet. You don't see Julio at red carpet. The reason why that? Because he wants people to look at him. So that's not exuding. That's something that he's created. Because he didn't come into the league like Deion Sanders. But he's trying to be like Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders was himself the first time I ever met him from Fort Myers. He was that way. At Florida State, he was that way. And it even magnified once he got into the league. Odell was not that way. He's changing to who he is now.
Well, here's the thing that worries me about this contract situation as it progresses, CC, and we get closer to week one. I don't want this to become a distraction for this team and for this new regime with the Giants. We recognize that there were a lot of question marks in that locker room last year, chemistry issues. They had too much talent to be a 13-loss team, but that's where they found themselves, and they had the second overall pick as a result of it. But if this thing continues to drag out, then I think it becomes a question that not only the head coach and the general manager has to answer, but other guys in that locker room have to answer. When is Odell going to get his financial security? He's done all the right things. He said all the right things. When is it actually going to take place? I don't think the Giants need that hanging over their heads when they're trying to compete for a championship. And that's ultimately what they're trying to do over the course of the next couple of years because they drafted Saquon Barkley second overall.
Is it as much of a distraction if Odell's not talking about it? As long as Odell's still showing up, as long as Odell is not giving any oxygen into this, which thus far he hasn't, then how much of a if they don't have a deal done, how much of a distraction can it be really? Because I'm sure the coach isn't going to proactively talk about it. As long as Odell isn't acting out or acting disgruntled, how much of a distraction can it
be? This is New York City, all right? And Odell has made it. Odell made a statement. He wanted to be paid quarterback money. He wanted to be the one of the highest paid in the league. That's not going to happen. Now, if he continues to take a low-key role, I'm here, I'm happy, and he deflects. It depends on what he do.
Right.
If he deflects everything, let's concentrate on this coming season, I'm not worried about it, then his teammates don't have that on them to answer questions every day. And with the New York media, it's totally different than other teams having to deal with that.
I think that would be another opportunity to demonstrate the kind of growth and maturity I hear you talking about, CC, if he continues to deflect on the business aspect of this. I think engaging in what should be agency talk would be another demonstration of seeking that attention, knowing that he can play a celebrity card in a way that other players might not be able to. You know, he has full-blown national celebrity recognition when it comes to who he is as a player. So I don't think he does himself any favors in the negotiation, to be candid, when it comes to the bottom line dollar amount for him to engage in that conversation.
Cooperation only goes as far as good faith negotiations. So if something happens where they're being disrespectful with the contract that they're offering and they're not giving him top of the market money, because everybody knows the next to get paid is always going to be the highest paid, then I think we might devolve when it comes to this situation.
No, it doesn't help your situation when your best friend is saying, oh, Odell would like to play for the Browns.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he would play for the Browns.
Well,
oh, that does not help.
No, and that's something that we won't be able to get to the bottom of this, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But that's something, if people don't know, Jarvis Landry, his teammate at LSU, obviously now plays for the Browns. He came out yesterday and said, yeah, Odell would love to be a Brown. If Odell said that to him, then that is Odell going in the wrong direction here. If that's just Jarvis just talking, because Jarvis done a lot of talking, right? We got the best receivers in football. I think he said we can score 40 points a game. There's no reason we can't score 40 points a game this year. Like, if Jarvis is just talking to be talking, that's not doing Odell any favors.
There is not an NFL player saying on another team, being the Cleveland Browns, we won one game in 2 years. There's no one on the Browns saying that a player would come there and play unless they have talked to that guy and that guy told him, man, I would ball there with the Browns.
That's a true story.
Hold on.
That's real.
Even though we're talking about the same guy who did say the Browns can win the Super Bowl this year and score 40 points a game.
Yeah, he said those things.
Mm-hmm.
But he believed those things. You don't say about it.
Because you're putting words in his
believe
mouth.
Believe what you want.
You're basically,
he
would be putting words in Odell's mouth, basically, essentially. Yeah. I hear what y'all are saying. All right. Chris Canty, we're going to see you later in the show. But coming up next, while one future NBA Hall of Famer is not ring chasing. That's next on First Things First. Now to one of my favorite Tar Heels ever, Vince Carter. He signed with the Atlanta Hawks this offseason. This will be Vince's 8th team and 21st season in the NBA. Now, unlike some players, he's not looking to chase rings late in his career. Carter said this, I come from an era where that's not how it was. So that's still instilled in me. And I don't have any problem with how it's done now. It's just not for me. Okay, Nick. Will chasing rings become the new norm in the NBA?
Here's the thing. I disagree with Vince Carter's statement that he comes from an era where this wasn't the norm. Now, what Kevin Durant did had never been the norm. What Boogie Cousins did had never been the norm. But guys, in the later stage of their career, which Vince obviously is in year 21. He is in the final. He's after the final act. He's after the encore. He's just still hanging out on stage. That we've seen. I love Vince, but that's where he is. We've seen guys do this forever. Some successfully, some not successfully. People remember Gary Payton.
People think chasing rings, though, that you have to win.
That you get a ring. Right?
Yes, but people have been chasing them for at least 4 years.
Right, and so, listen, people remember Gary Payton in the stint with the Lakers and Karl Malone. That one was unsuccessful for Malone and Payton. But Payton did get a ring with the 06 Miami Heat. Mitch Richmond tried to do this with the Lakers the year before Malone did it. How about Barkley? At the tail end of his, past his prime tail end of his career, joining up with Olajuwon and Drexler in Houston. I mean, do you guys remember Chris Webber going to the NBA Finals? Well, I'm sorry, going to the Detroit Pistons when they were fresh off going to the NBA Finals and getting knocked out by LeBron in the Eastern Conference Finals when he was a 10-minute-a-game guy. For some guys, this works. For some guys, it doesn't. But the idea that it's a new thing, it's not a new thing. It's a new thing for superstars maybe to do it, but it's not a new thing for older players at the end of their career to do it.
No, you're right about the first part. It's right for the superstars. We haven't seen people like Kevin Durant. We haven't seen people like Boogie Cousins.
People
but
still in their
I'll
prime.
Take you even all the way back. Bob McAdoo led the NBA in scoring. Eventually, he ended up playing for the Lakers like as a role player. Yep. You know, we didn't call it chasing rings. We called it at the end of your career, what are your options? I like Vince. What I don't agree with Vince is if I'm going to play basketball, man, I might as well play for something. If I'm going to be in Atlanta playing how many minutes I'm going to play a night, why wouldn't I be wanting to play for a team that had the chance of making the playoffs or advancing the playoffs a long, long time? So, you don't have to chase rings, but I'd like to be able to play for a team that was competitive. I mean, 21 years in the league playing. I mean, what's he playing for? I mean, just to get more numbers or to potentially have more fun? Because I know it's more fun when you win than it is to lose.
And again, I just want people to understand the history here. How about just Vince Carter's history? Vince Carter did end up going to Orlando the year after they went to the NBA Finals. He did end up signing with Dallas the year after they won a championship. So, like, Vince Carter himself, and that was it was later in his career, it was past his prime. He wasn't in year 21, but, I mean, he signs with Dallas when he's 35 years old. He's averaging, you know, 10 points a game. Mm-hmm. They had just won. They were the defending champions. And so, but the other point that this brings up is, and I think this is what we are going to see this year if the Warriors win again, is all rings are not created equal. Like, that is something that I think Kevin Durant is experiencing because he's at the pinnacle of his basketball powers. He's at the pinnacle of his basketball accomplishment. But oddly enough, his public profile might be the lowest it's been, his public approval rating. We don't judge. LeBron's got 3 rings. Every sports fan knows which one was the most important. Dwayne Wade's got 3 rings. Every sports fan knows which one for him was the most important. That was the first one, the one where he dominated the NBA Finals and did it with an older Shaq. And for LeBron, it was the last one, the one in Cleveland. Like, there are, and for Steph, what's the most important ring? Or the ring that we value the most? The one
when
he got before.
Without Kevin Durant.
Without Kevin Durant.
Sure.
So, like,
sure.
The guys that do get rings late in their career, like, they are NBA champions, but it's a different type of NBA champion.
Ebony brings a good point there. We're not keeping track of those guys.
Mm-mm.
We're only keeping track of the marquee guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not keeping track of, man, if Karl Malone gets one, Gary Payton gets one on the back end. We don't dislike it, but we're not going to be able to track these guys. Like, if Vince, based on how long he's played, if he was to win a championship, it would never be the same as how long Dirk has played and the way he won a championship. So to think that we're tracking all rings and all rings are the same, like, I don't think that would be truthful.
Can I ask you a question? Just, I know it crosses sports, but about late in your career after you left the Vikings, when you ended up having an opportunity to come back for year 16, you ended up going to Miami. Miami was not the best positioned team to win a championship, and you obviously were at that
point. Well, actually, when I signed with Miami, Miami had the best record in the NFL. They did have Ricky Williams, who was the leading rusher in the league. So.
Okay, so that was going in. I forgot it was mid-season signing. My apologies. Going into the year, they weren't one of the favorites, I should have said, but by that point, they were where they were. How much did that play a factor in it? Because I know
it played a little bit of a factor, but there's still too many other variables. St. Louis was a team that I looked at potentially joining because of the fit with the offense and the potential to win a ring, but it still wouldn't change my life. Right. Like, even if you go to that team, you win one ring, people would think, well, man, it's still not going to change.
That's not like legacy cementing. And I appreciate, you know, that some of these teams that Vince went to at points in his career were very contentious, competitive teams. I just don't think he's the guy that's motivated by it. I don't think for one second he goes, oh, I'm going to win a title there, so it's going to drive my decision. I also think, and I don't want to put words in Vince's mouth, I think he misspoke. I think he was talking about pinnacle in the peak of their career, KD-type players going to legendary teams in that moment. I think that's got to be what he meant, because for sure it's been done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's been done cross sports, and it's been done in his sport with guys. I mean, Vince played so long, he's played in a bunch of eras. When he says my era, like, what era are we exactly talking about?
Sure.
But I just, we will always have guys at the end, and I don't begrudge them this at all, that in the last couple of years say, if I'm not going to play big minutes, if I'm not going to be a 25 point a game guy, I want to be playing in the playoffs. It is what is different is the Durant Boogie situation.
Yes.
And that's a one-off or a two-off in NBA history.
Yes.
Yeah.
Vince thought picking up his degree was more important than a playoff game.
Oh.
And after looking back on it, that degree from North Carolina, what it's worth? Oh, is it?
It's worth a whole lot. It's worth a whole lot. You rah-rah Tar Heels.
That's
coming up next. Why is Deshaun Watson reminding one Texan of Russell Wilson? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, and we're going viral. Browns rookie QB Baker Mayfield is in the middle of his first NFL training camp. His head coach, Hugh Jackson, has some advice for his first-year QB.
Tell you what, this is a little bit different than Oklahoma training camp.
What's up, my son?
So I guess that's what you said when you said it was different.
I tried to tell you. And what time do you normally get up in the morning?
I was a little bit later this morning.
No, I know. But what time do you normally come over?
Depends on when we start.
Huh?
Try and get in about 2 hours before.
Okay. Do you ever come in with your boy Five?
He does his own little workouts in the mornings.
Where's your own little workout in the morning?
Huh?
Where's your own little workout in the morning? You starting your career how you want to. You see what I'm saying? It's a competition in everything you do, baby. You know how to do it.
That's interesting.
Competition.
Oh, yeah. That's Hugh. Hugh's a good coach, man. He is a good coach. It's hard to win in this league. I hope he can get it turned around. But, man, he's done a good job when he was in Oakland, did a good job when he's in Cincinnati. That's great footage there. Very, very rare. And as you could see, he's letting them know, you're going to be a star in this league. You're going to be a starter. What kind of program are you going to have then? Because he will have a program then. And Tyrod Taylor, people would think he's not a superstar. Look how hard he's working to try to get better at his craft.
I don't want to make too much of this. Are you surprised at all that Baker would not already be as the number one overall pick there at the same time or as early as anybody else?
No, he don't know any. He don't know any better.
He just
guys think they work hard until they get in the pros and been like, goodness gracious. Now this is hard work. Now we know how to work as pros, and that's a learned skill. They'll get there. That's why they call them rookies.
That is great footage.
No, you can't wait for your second year.
Oh, man.
They're unbelievable.
He's like, man, when am I going to get my second year? I'm going to get there when Chris Carter
gets
there.
That is September 5th.
Get me a program like Chris got getting ready for the show.
I'm not going to do Chris Carter's pre-show program.
All right, fine.
That is a different type of show, America.
It is time for some stories that are going to start your morning. Oh,
my
gosh.
Guy.
Giddy up. All right, Andrew Luck getting up for his first action in 19 months, which has the QB feeling a little bit nervous. Luck said, quote, there is part of me that thought I would never have fun playing football again.
Wow.
Chris Carter, how do you think Luck will handle being back under center?
Now, this was a great interview. I mean, he got real emotional. His first practice, he had to hold back even tears, but he thought he was getting ready for a game. You can see it was something that might have been taken away from him. So it lets you know, too, that the setbacks that they had, they were real. These medical reports that we heard, man, they were conflicting each other, what the team was reporting, what was really going on. Those were real. You could see a real change in his overall attitude and appreciate football.
And it made me think back to something Jim Irsay said. Now, Jim Irsay's not known for the most insightful quotes, tweets, song lyrics, anything like that. But if you remember, Ursay last year said, you know, the hardest real estate to conquer is the 4 inches between your ears. And he was clearly wrong in making it seem like Andrew Luck, it was just a mental thing, not a physical thing. Mm-hmm. But he might have been right in that in addition to the physical issues, Andrew Luck was dealing with legitimate emotional questions about, do I even, like, how fun is this game?
But, Nick, what is the real average space between a person's ears, though?
Well, for Ursay, it might have been shrunken a little bit over the years.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. So, a hot mess. So, we're going to move on now to the Rams.
Extracurriculars.
According to reports, Aaron Donald is not expected to report to camp anytime soon. He'll miss today's deadline that would have given him a year of free agency, making him a restricted free agent next year. Chris Carter, how do you expect this to play out?
The Rams, I'll be very disappointed in the Rams and Sean McVay, their general manager. They've done a great job. You don't bring in Ndamukong Suh and put him next to the best player and not sign him to a contract extension. You don't trade for Brandon Cooks. Mm. Brandon Cooks, is he a number one receiver? And give him that kind of money. Yeah. Todd Gurley is a beast, but you give him a new contract 2 years early?
Yeah.
No, you got to pay Aaron Donald. Let's get this thing done.
And it's surprising to me that they still seem this far apart because they went through this last year. They'd been going through this offseason, so they know what Aaron Donald wants. That doesn't mean they have to acquiesce to it, but I would think exactly what you said, which is if you know what he wants and the plan is to bring him in, you don't give those guys that money unless you eventually feel like we're going to give him what he wants.
And yeah, so I think they're far apart on those on the guarantees.
Guarantees.
Yeah.
Right, which he probably wants the vast majority of that deal fully guaranteed.
Well, the fine print. Okay, now to the Buffalo Bills. Head coach Sean McDermott had high praise for his rookie QB. McDermott said this about Josh Allen. Quote, "The game does not seem too big for Josh." CeCe, will Josh Allen be a successful NFL QB?
This is a good quote. I end up talking to the coach, Sean McDermott, this weekend, Hall of Fame weekend, giving me great insight on who they think the kid is. And also, Sean's a defensive expert, so he has done some things from a defensive standpoint, coverages and everything. Sean has learned that this kid, when he makes a mistake once, he doesn't come back and make the same mistake. So he believes he will be a superstar, but he's also realizing that he must be patient as a coach because the kid is going to have some tough days.
And Josh Allen, fair or otherwise, is going to be scrutinized from the media side of things more than even most rookie top drafted rookie quarterbacks are, because there was the biggest divergence of opinion between the statistical analytics crowd, or thought one way about Josh Allen, not highly at all, and the scout football player, eye test, arm talent crowd that made him a top 10 pick. And so when you have a player like that, that kind of the old school football guys feel one way about, the new school analytics guys feel a very different way about, he will be a flashpoint player until we figure out who he really is as a pro.
Nick, you know I'm about the talent.
Right, and I'm typically about the talent, but with
talent or analytics, come on, which one are you going to be on?
You can use analytics to see the talent.
Analyze the talent. See
exactly.
What he did there? All right,
exactly.
Finally, Deshaun Watson.
Deshaun Watson, analytics say he's good. The eye test say he's good. His teammates say he's good.
Well, he's set to enter his sophomore season. He's already earning high praise from his new teammate, Honey Badger. The all-pro defensive back says that Watson reminds him of Russell Wilson. What do you think of Honey Badger's comparison, CeCe?
I think it's a great comparison. Also, Honey Badger, they had a lot of battles when he's in Arizona playing against Seattle.
Yep.
So I like the fact that he had multiple times playing against. A lot of times the player's like, hey, this guy's like Michael Jordan. He's like, he played 13 minutes against someone.
Right.
So, and Tyrann Mathieu is a student of the game. So he understands how quarterbacks, what they can do. I think that's a tremendous compliment. If Deshaun Watson ends up being Russell Wilson, shoot, the Houston Texans, they'll be plenty, plenty happy. And if he ends up being Russell Wilson, I believe that they'll be playing for championships. The thing that I'm concerning people is just be careful of trying to add the 7 games we saw last year and trying to make that a complete season. Typically in the NFL, I expect a correction for Deshaun Watson and for him to struggle a little more, not for him to be a bad player. I still believe he's going to be a great player in the league, but I feel like in year 2 that he's going to struggle a little more than people expect.
Well, the question is how big of the correction will there be, not will there be a correction. There absolutely will be a correction. Nobody can play at the level he played at, particularly in the final five games he played for them.
Yes.
I mean, this was a team that without an average...
That has to be, too. I think that we need to make sure that we let people know that.
They were the best offense in football right. the last month he played with them, and the rest of the year they averaged 12 points a game. Like, I mean, he was, forget a force multiplier. He was an exponential force multiplier. He did everything for them. He had them almost beating the Patriots if Bill O'Brien doesn't bungle the clock. He had a team that has been just moribund offensively for a half decade look absolutely dynamic. So a correction is coming. But is the correction going to correct him from the statistically best quarterback in the league for a month to the ninth best quarterback? Or to the 19th best quarterback? Like, that's the question here. The Russell Wilson comparison, while the Texans would sign up for that in a heartbeat, one quick qualifier. One thing Russell Wilson has been spectacular at is staying healthy, is being available,
mm-hmm.
is a guy who, even when he's dinged up, able to play. Now, no one expects you to play through a torn ACL. That wasn't a ding-up. That was something where he was out for the season. But it's his second torn ACL, and he is a player who will get out of the pocket, who escapability is an enormous part of his success. How many of those highlights were just regular dropbacks, and how many of him mm-hmm. were doing spectacular things with his legs? Mm-hmm. I want to see that. Because the Texans, we talked to their defense earlier. I love their wide receivers, but they have a bad offensive line. And so he is like, that is going to be a real pressure point for him. He's going to be on the run a lot. Mm. They do not have a single offensive lineman you look at as Pro Bowl caliber. They have a bunch of replacement level guys, and I don't know that they have a great running situation. So they're going to be asking a lot from Deshaun Watson.
That's why that J.J. Watt, that injury and what that defense does, because they can get short fields or they can get turnovers, mm-hmm. which they win the turnover possession every. They get extra possessions. That leads to that second year where people think they have a book on you. Man, you play on the short field, you play with some leads, you can build on what he did last year.
All right, so will it be a correction or a full-on sophomore slump? We'll see. Moving on to the Vikings. Pro Football Focus ranked Minnesota as the top receiving core in the NFL. Now, this including the dynamic duo of Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, who are both likely to benefit from having an upgrade at QB with Kirk Cousins. CC, how much of the Vikings' success will depend on Diggs and Thielen?
This is where the Vikings are. And Thielen and Diggs, both of them, have had outstanding last 2 years. And they've done it with a couple different quarterbacks or not the best quarterback situation. Where I believe is going to change is not necessarily in Thielen and Diggs and the impact they're going to make. I hope they can play to the level they have the last couple years, because if they do, where I believe the difference is going to be is in their offensive coordinator, in John DeFilippo, his ability to be able to get the tight end involved in the game. And I believe Kyle Rudolph is one of the best athletic tight ends that we have seen. I believe they'll utilize him more. When you add that to Kirk Cousins, what Kirk Cousins has done in the last 3 years, he's one of the top five in a major of different categories as far as percentage to the tight end, passing rating to the tight end, touchdown passes to the tight end. So Thielen and Diggs is going to get a lot of help by DeFilippo coming over from Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. We saw what he did last year with Zach Ertz having his best year of his
career. And helped Trey Burton get $40 million.
I just shook hands with Trey on the sideline at the Hall of Fame game. He was like, I told you.
Yeah,
I was going to get that
Trey
money.
Was sitting right here yeah. and said, it was off camera, but we can tell it now. He said, hey, I'm a free agent. Any advice for me? And I think Chris said, go get that money. And he got that money. But in large part, John DeFilippo deserves some
right.
credit.
And even going back as far as three seasons, 2015, the impact that he had when he was with the Cleveland Browns on Gary Barnidge, who was an average player, ended up making the Pro Bowl under me. So it's the totality of Thielen and Diggs are ready yeah. to roll. Diggs just got his new contract. Thielen is very, very happy. He's a hometown product there. His expectation of his career was never to be a frontline guy. And I believe that they alternate. One game, this guy's number one. Next game. And both of them are happy because they're best friends together. Even when Diggs got his new contract, one of the first people to tweet him and holler at him was Thielen, happy for him. So that relationship there, we're typically where we're being divas and we like to get all the money and all the balls. In Minnesota, they have a great relationship, and I believe they have an underrated tight end in Calvary.
And that relationship is important given the fact that Adam Thielen, as a guy that was a street free agent, that we talked with him about, you know, being a guy that went to training camps as a fan in Mankato, went to a small school. He, a few years ago, got what he thought was a great contract. It was like 4 years, $20 million. It was for a guy that realistically didn't know if he was ever going to be an NFL player.
Yes.
But last year, he was 1,200 yards. He's playing for about $5 million a year. He sees his teammate, Stephon Diggs, who had fewer than 900 yards, get a major contract extension. That's where the good relationship, I think, is extra helpful. But I'm going to mention one guy you didn't mention. Because Diggs was a fifth-round pick. We said Thielen was a street free agent. They have spent a first-round pick on a wide receiver in the last few years. It was Laquon Treadwell. Laquon Treadwell last year had 200 yards receiving. He obviously showed talent in college. It's not like people thought when he was drafted, oh, what are the Vikings doing? He was considered a guy that would go mid to late first round for a number of teams, and he hasn't had the level of production. Last year he played in all 16 games, still didn't have the level of production. So what can he do with a better quarterback situation?
Well, if he wants to stay around there, he's going to have a great training camp. These preseason games are important for him. His biggest problem is he hasn't been consistent catching the football. He hadn't been consistent as far as his overall assignments. And Thielen and Diggs are both better possession receivers than him. And he's not a deep threat. So if they're a better possession receiver for you, which you're supposed to be the big physical guy, which he's bigger than them, he weighs more than them, but they've been better at doing what he's going to do. The Vikings don't have time because this is a team that is ready to win now. But it's a big year for him.
And they've got, there's just, if you, the reason they can be ranked number one, even if you don't think of Thielen or Diggs as top five wide receivers, you know, at this point, is because of the overall depth. Kendall Wright is a really good option as your fourth receiver. You mentioned Kyle Rudolph. I thought Tyler Conklin was a really good college player. They got him in the fifth round of this draft. Like, that's a tight end position. So they're, and they've got Dalvin Cook coming back from injury. Behind him, they have Latavius Murray. Like, they're the guys that can catch balls for them. Holy, they don't just have frontline guys, but the backup players are good backups. Third string guys are good third string guys.
Yes, Kendall Wright can play a big game. Don't forget Dalvin Cook coming out of the backfield. Spectacular rookie year, coming back from a knee injury, added to that passing attack. For those out there didn't think I knew anything about the purple, I do know my team.
And that is, and a
looks
stacked roster.
On you. Yeah.
That is deep, deep, looks deep fantastic. Roster.
It does. It really does. Coming up, Dak Prescott. Now, they missed the playoffs last year, but can the Cowboys get back to the playoffs in year three for Dak? That's it. Well, welcome back to First Things First. Super Bowl champ Chris Canty here with us. Good to see you again, Chris.
Absolutely. We back at it.
Back at it, of course. Speaking of being back at it, we are talking about those Cowboys. Had to go straight to it. All right. After a disappointing second year in the NFL where the Dallas Cowboys missed the playoffs, Dak Prescott admitted that he needs to be more consistent in year three. Now, Dak told Sports Illustrated, quote, "I have bigger and higher expectations for myself than anyone else does or ever will. So for me, it's not trying to live up to expectations. But you want to win, and you want to make that play to win. It's that, trying to win on every throw. I got myself out of position. Sometimes you want it too much. You look at some of my interceptions, it's simple as that." Chris Canty, what do you think Dak has to do to be successful this season?
Well, I think the first thing is that the owner needs to not create distractions for his quarterback, because you recognize where Dak Prescott was in year two, and you want him to take that next step in year three. You want to make sure that you have a franchise quarterback. So a couple of Jerry Jones's comments off the cuff regarding the anthem policy, I think, put his quarterback in a tough situation. The organization tried to put him out front and make him the face of a decision that the locker room made, where everybody really recognizes that it was a front office decision. That's neither here nor there. But when I want to focus on...
But it is
on,
an excellent point.
But it is important.
I don't want to focus on that part of it, though. I just,
because he still got to play football and football. Manage that.
Exactly. I want to look at the football aspect of it. When we start talking about the football part of it, I think The biggest thing for Dak Prescott is making sure that he has a healthy Tyron Smith in the lineup and that he has Ezekiel Elliott for all 16 games, because we recognize that Dak Prescott was not the same quarterback when he didn't have that running game to lean on. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the kind of difference that Ezekiel Elliott can have on that field. He is, as you always say, Nick, a force multiplier. He's somebody that dictates fronts and coverages. That means you make a cleaner picture for your quarterback when he's trying to get the reads from the secondary in terms of what coverages he's going up against in the passing game. When you look at Tyron Smith, what he means to that offensive line, more so than any group on the football field, offensive line needs that continuity because it's chemistry. You have to be able to have that along the front in order to have success. So keeping Dak Prescott upright, making sure he has a running game to lean on, I think those are the biggest things for him in terms of being able to take that next step in year three.
From a football standpoint, what does Dak need to do? I hope this offseason he's worked on his arm to help his arm strength, because if you see him when he gets into problem, it's when his footwork is a little bit sloppy and he doesn't have a big gun. Now, he looks like a powerful athlete, but as far as NFL quarterbacks, I would say he's right in the middle of the pack as far as overall arm strength. So sometime in the NFL, when you haven't seen it, you get surprised that guys move as fast as they do, or plays that you made in college, they force you to be able to, you can't make those plays. So then you get to a player's weakness. So I believe arm strength, I believe that they have helped him work on that. His overall footwork, which you see guys as they get older in the league, they work on it. But I just believe from a confidence standpoint, him and his wide receivers and tight ends, they have to be able to stand, they have to be able to communicate one to another, because man, they're going to have to be able to make some plays. And a lot of times, the quarterback and the wideout only know what was really called and what really happened. So even when you have these negative plays, they're going to have to put a positive spin on it, because they don't have superior talent. Now, I have worked with quarterbacks and been part of wide receiver groups that were better than this one, but we weren't the best. And being in sync, and sometime when something went wrong, trying to put a positive spin on it, it became more important than our talent. And I just believe Dallas is going to face a lot of those situations together. And can they stay together as a team and as a passing unit, I believe is going to be paramount for their season.
Let's assume for a moment they'll just have league average health, okay? Because obviously if Tyron Smith missed a huge chunk of the season, like then everything's different. Zeke's not suspended. He's healthy. The offensive line has, you know, decent to above average health. What would be the reason this Cowboys team is not a double-digit win team? That last year, they had the 13th scoring defense, the 8th total defense. It was number 8 against the rush, number 11 against the pass. It was a fine defense. That's not a dominant defense, but that's not a defense that's losing you games. They go into the year probably once again with the best offensive line. I believe they have the best running game in football. What's the reason they wouldn't be a 10-plus win team if they're not? The passing game. Like, so that's how Dak's going to be evaluated, whether it's fair or not. How good is this football team? Because we go into it saying the defense is good enough to compete for a playoff spot. The running game is as good as any in the league. The offensive line is better than any quarterback in football will have. So I understand you don't have great wide receivers, might not have good wide receivers outside of Allen Hurns. And if Allen Hurns is your best option, you don't have a ton of great options. But you know what? Like, that's where the quarterback has to make do, because you can't – what quarterback in the league's got a great offensive line, a great running back, and great wide receivers? It's few and far between. So, like, that's how he'll be evaluated league-wide.
But that's my question. That's exactly my question, Nick, is when I hear that the Dallas Cowboys say we're going to do a Dak-friendly offense – other than Zeke Elliott, because we all know what Zeke Elliott is and what he can do, what does a Dak-friendly offense look like? What is that with these receivers?
If I'm able to design it, yeah. I have to look at, okay, where do I think I might be able to improve from a wide receiver standpoint in this year's unit that I didn't have in last year's unit? So I've got minus Jason Witten, minus Dez Bryant. I know I'm not going to get more experience, but where they are is they are faster. Mm. They are faster at tight end, and they are faster at the X receiver that Dez played at. So a Dak-friendly offense to me would be, I know they're going to try to play us in the box. Man, we got to throw the ball down the field, okay. Ebony, and we got to be able to make some big plays to make the game easier. Dak is not going to be able to go into a game and go 25 out of 34.
Right.
You know, no. He might, if they throw the ball 35 times, he might only have 20 completions, but you want the yardage and that yards per attempt to be way up there. So this is what I'm going to be looking at. Do they utilize where they're faster as far as their wide receivers than they were last year? You add Tavon Austin, Effie's going to play wide receiver. Hearns is faster than Dez Bryant. So that's where I would try to make it more Dak-friendly, Canty, as far as throwing that ball down the field.
And in staying with that, it should be opportunities downfield in the passing game, because when you start talking about the defenses trying to come up to the line of scrimmage and play the run, well, that's taking a secondary defender out of the passing game. So you should really have a lot of single high looks, which means one-on-one outside of the numbers. If you got pro wide receivers, they should be able to win some of those one-on-ones. And if you have a quarterback that is, you know, an average to above average quarterback, he should be able to complete a lot of those passes. So when you have one-on-one opportunities in the passing game, Dak Prescott, those receivers, they have to take advantage of that. They're going to get a lot of those looks with Ezekiel Elliott in that offensive line. It's just a matter of, can they convert in those situations?
And besides the Carolina Panthers, they should have the best play action in football. That should be the best way to throw the football, to be able to fake the ball into the line of scrimmage where everyone thinks you're going to run, and you have more time for the quarterback to drop back. There's less coverages you can play against play action, and for a younger quarterback, it gives him time to read deep down the field. So those are the things that I like to see with Dak going into year number three.
And I don't know if you guys read anything into this, but because it's the Cowboys and because they're the most scrutinizing covered team in football, every single play of their 7-on-7 training camp-wise has been tracked by the media. Dak, in training camp and 7-on-7, which is supposed to be beneficial passing situations, 3 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, completing less than or right around 65% of his passes in 7-on-7. Now, part of that's going to be the wide receivers. I understand that. But that's something, if you're struggling in those situations, and we know that his calling guard his rookie year was 4 interceptions for the season, that's got to get cleaned up quickly, or it's going to be more like 2017 Dak than 2016 Dak, which would be problematic for Dallas.
Certainly, certainly. All right, Chris Canty sticking around with us. Up next, how bright is the future for the reigning Super Bowl champ, the Philly Eagles? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, Chris Canty still with us, and we're going viral. Jets rookie QB Sam Darnold is in line to be with New York for the foreseeable future. But second-year safety Jamal Adams thought his career with the Jets might be cut short.
Oh, I guess I forgot my code.
They ain't cut me.
Yes, they did.
They must have cut me.
Man.
Already? Since year two.
Damn,
y'all already cut me.
That's hilarious.
That's real now.
That's
hilarious. Hey. Oh, yeah. Sometimes. They cut you. They take your badge from you, change the code.
Or when your badge doesn't work. You have that key card and you go to swipe and it doesn't open the door, you might have a problem.
You poke fun at my radio career. I had a friend, man, who, like, it seems like something out of Office Space. He got let go. They forgot to tell him. He showed up to work. Swipe, don't work. Mm-mm. Swipe, don't work. What's going on? Someone lets him in, they're like, oh, come over here. There's a reason that swipe doesn't work.
Yeah, we had a couple problems with this. The guys were playing in our poker game. Mm. Man, they had gone up to the office, and they hadn't paid all their debts. They had got cut from the team on the way out. Didn't nobody want to say nothing, so Chris had to do it. Hey, y'all want to settle y'all's debts for y'all?
Hold on. You did that.
Yeah, so now at the end of the night or the next morning, you couldn't start the next work day without paying up your debts. That became the rule.
Especially for guys on the roster bubble. Maybe you had a little longer line of credit because they thought Chris Carter going to be here the next day.
Yeah, I mean, guys knew, don't fight Chris. Don't say nothing bad about him because he'll go tell Denny. Denny will get rid of you.
Take some action.
Those are some good off-the-air stories.
That's hysterical. Yeah. All right, a year after winning the Super Bowl, the Eagles have locked in their brain trust for the next few years. Both head coach Doug Peterson and GM Howie Roseman were given contract extensions through year 2022. Now, with these two locked up, then you got Carson Wentz returning from injury and that other quarterback that won your Super Bowl. They got a loaded roster. They're looking for a repeat. The future looks awful bright in Philly. Canty, how well are the Eagles set up for long-term sustained success?
I think they're as well set up as any other organization in the National Football League. Now, you do get a little bit concerned when you start winning at the highest level. Super Bowl teams always lose players and coaches off of the staff. You know, John DeFilippo, he went to be the offensive coordinator with the Minnesota Vikings.
Yes.
Frank Reich, the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. So you do worry about some of the continuity with the coaching staff. But as long as you have Doug Peterson, Howie Roseman in place, I think the organization will do a good job of evaluating talent and making sure those guys are positioned to have success on the field. Now, when it comes to what the Eagles have on their roster, I think they're going to be able to sustain this level of success because you do have a franchise quarterback in Carson Wentz coming back off of the knee injury. You got a capable backup, and your big guys on both sides, offensive and defensive lines, are pretty much better than all the other big guys, all those other position groups in the National Football League. So when you have big guys that allow you to Bill Parcells, you say big guys allow you to compete. So when you have that and you can protect your quarterback and you can get after the other team's quarterback, you're going to have a chance to have a lot of success.
Here's the other thing that benefits them, oddly enough, about those big guys, their best two units. They're all on second contracts. And so why does that matter? It matters because it's not like the situation in this regard in Seattle. Where in Seattle, because I thought that team was as positioned for long-term success as any I had seen, we knew that the bill was coming due. They had drafted so well. They had so many Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Russell Wilson, obviously, guys on rookie contracts that at some point, Bobby Wagner, all those guys are going to come due around the same time, and you can't pay everybody. Carson Wentz is the one star on the team. Now, that's a big star on the team that you're still getting well under market value. So it is a relatively speaking sustainable model. And I agree with you that aside from New England, which just seems ageless, I'd rather have the Eagles situation than any other situation in football. But that can change so quickly. Like, what is a dynasty in the NFL? In a league where we've only seen one team win back-to-back Super Bowls this century, what is a dynasty? Is a dynasty just winning 2 out of 3 years? Like, in that case, sure, they're set up for it. But, like, you can't project too far forward in this league more than really 1 or 2 seasons.
Yeah, dynasty is not a word you can use in this current era in sports unless you adjust the time. You know, Golden State, what they're doing in basketball is very, very special, but it's not measured to the dynasty of the old NBA. In the NFL, dynasty, man, in five-year window, what New England is doing, man, we're not going to see anyone do that, but that's what you have to be able to look at that five-year window. And if it was a fantasy draft, I'm taking Philadelphia, everything they present, because the owners included, their stadium, their home crowd, how much revenue they're going to generate. But the one thing that they have been able to do is through winning, and they got good big people, they got a great quarterback, but the one thing people have mentioned, they have sent out the message to the football world, you can play here and have a good time, which is not everywhere you can go in the league. And right now, where New England is a dynasty, and you have what they're doing in Philadelphia, it seems like they're at odds with Philadelphia. You can't have fun. You're not going to have fun. So that culture being spread around the NFL is because this is not a team just of players they've drafted. They've done well in trade. They've done well as far as free agent, Alshon Jeffrey, other players that they've added free agent-wise. So this culture around the league, when you get that's because this is what San Francisco did in Joe Montana's day. Man, they added these little veteran players along the way that people don't mention that helped them sustain that level. So that culture and that being spread around the league, Chris, I know you know that's really important.
Yeah, it's kind of like what the Golden State Warriors are doing in the NBA. It's like when we have that level of success, then you get those veteran players on those discounts. You're not having to pay market value for those guys. And that's exactly what the Philadelphia Eagles had when getting Chris Long to come over and
didn't you have that on teams
Bennett.
That you played on?
Absolutely. Now, I wasn't taking no discounts, but a lot of guys would take discounts because they want an opportunity to compete for a championship.
Correct.
And at the heart of that is a quarterback, a young quarterback that can play at an MVP caliber level. You're going to be able to attract a lot of free agents around the National Football League because of that. So when you're in that type of situation, Howie Roseman, you've got to take advantage of it. To this point, he's done that.
Right, and that kind of speaks to the cultural component of what you were mentioning earlier, Nick, which makes them different than Seattle. It didn't seem like, for whatever reason, Pete Carroll and co. could create a culture in Seattle that made guys willing to take those kind of pay cuts to be a part of what they were building
well,
there.
Well, I thought, listen, I did think they had that. And I think Earl Thomas is saying right now, I did take less money because I thought the Legion of Boom was going to stay together. But it was a volatile culture. Instead of the culture CeCe's talking about, which is, man, we have fun at work. Yep. We're the anti-New England, whatever. Seattle, it was
at your throat.
Right.
It's competition.
Iron sharpening
every
iron.
Day.
Yes.
They've been fined multiple times by the NFL for practicing when they were not supposed to have contacted practices. They were tackling and being more physical. But what Philadelphia has going on is, man, that's a great city to play in. Right there in the Rams. The Rams have LeBron. The Eagles got Philadelphia, Joel Embiid. Like, people start looking at from a culture standpoint, man, this is a great sports environment to be in.
And to me, oddly enough, the biggest question on this team moving forward, and it's even if I have confidence he'll be fine, is we don't know what Carson Wentz is going to look like post-knee injury. We think we've seen so many guys in the last 20 years come back from torn ACLs. We've seen so many quarterbacks be absolutely fine. But one of the things that did make Carson Wentz special was not only his athleticism, but his ability, his strength in the pocket to shake off a hit, to shake off the rush and make big plays downfield. Is there going to be any almost like hesitation or sketchiness for a guy who suffered a major injury?
Yeah.
I don't think there will, but that is a question that's yet to be answered.
Well, here's the thing with that, Nick, and that's a valid point or a valid concern, but when you start to think about these young athletic quarterbacks, at some point they have to evolve to quarterbacks that consistently win from the pocket.
This could be
a blessing in disguise for Carson Wentz in terms of moving up that timetable and when he's focusing on the cerebral part of the game. So that's a way to
look
at it.
It's only helped Tom Brady.
Exactly, and guess what? You got a capable backup in Nick Foles, so you don't have to rush him back.
Here's the only pushback to that, though. Playing that way had him ready to win league MVP. Typically, guys, as they evolve, I'll take Mike Vick. Like, Mike Vick obviously needed to evolve. Cam Newton to this day needs to evolve. Guys that playing that way, Steve Young never had to evolve.
Yeah, I don't think Carson Wentz had the style, nor he had the stats that would match Cam Newton or Michael Vick. He didn't run like them. Now, he got hurt running, but he is not. Because he's a good athlete, that he didn't play reckless. All right? He is a pocket passer who is a good athlete, but he's not reckless running the football.
Reckless? Is that what you're saying? I'm just asking.
No, well, Vick certainly.
When he got knocked out in Atlanta. Remember that? When he was showboating, he got knocked out from the side?
I just went on record.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course.
But just those were probably the wrong names to bring up because those guys running was such a big part of their game. My point is playing his way had him playing at the top of the league. And so it would be hard for me, if I'm either coaching him or if I am him, to change that immediately. I want to see if I can do that.
He doesn't have a long resume of running the ball. Now, guarantee, when he was watching the Super Bowl on the sideline, I guarantee you he knows, man, they got live bullets out there and they can hurt you. That's what experience grants you in the league. All right? These guys are closer to me. These guys can't hurt me. That's the responsibility of every quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is fighting the same thing. Mm-hmm. All right? But we ain't worried about him. He's been hurt multiple times.
Totally.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.